When Tamir Rice was shot by police, Rizmaya Menakem and his wife watched the news in stunned silence. As parents of a young Black son, they felt a visceral terror that transcended intellectual understanding. Their bodies knew something their minds couldn't fully process. This powerful insight forms the foundation of My Grandmother's Hands. Racial trauma lives not in our thoughts, but in our physical selves, passed down through generations. White supremacy isn't primarily about conscious beliefs. It's embedded in our nervous systems, muscles, and reflexes. When we experience trauma, our bodies enter survival mode through the activation of the vagus nerve, what Menakem calls our soul nerve, triggering fight, flight, or freeze responses. These reactions become deeply conditioned, creating automatic physiological responses that bypass conscious thought entirely. Consider your own bodily responses in different racial contexts. Do your shoulders tense in certain neighborhoods? Does your breathing become shallow around certain groups? These physical responses aren't random. They're your body processing generations of historical and cultural information that your conscious mind might not recognize. This embodied understanding explains why so many well-intentioned efforts at racial reconciliation fail. We're addressing the wrong system, trying to convince the thinking brain while ignoring the body's deeply embedded patterns and survival responses. Racialized trauma affects three distinct groups in America differently. African Americans experience it through generations of systemic oppression and daily microaggressions. White Americans carry trauma from historical perpetration and inherited guilt. Law enforcement officers develop a third variety shaped by institutional culture and violence exposure. These traumas manifest physically, from immediate responses like elevated heart rate to long-term health impacts, including hypervigilance, anxiety, depression, and cardiovascular disease. Unprocessed trauma spreads between bodies, creating ripple effects across generations. Epigenetic research shows trauma can alter DNA expression that passes to children. Fetuses in traumatized mothers inherit altered nervous systems as stress hormones affect development. The Adverse Childhood Experiences study demonstrates that repetitive trauma extends beyond mental health, potentially reducing life expectancy by 20 years. Our bodies carry the unhealed wounds of our ancestors, both from being oppressed and being oppressors. White body supremacy originated in medieval Europe, particularly England, where brutality was normalized. Public executions served as entertainment, while daily life exposed people to floggings, chained criminals, and displayed corpses. English colonists came to America fleeing this violence, the Great Plague, and severe poverty. Pilgrims and Puritans escaped religious persecution, where many faced branding, mutilation, or flogging. When settling in America, they carried this unprocessed trauma with them. Until the late 17th century, these traumas were primarily inflicted by white bodies upon other white bodies. The concepts of whiteness and blackness emerged during this period. The terms white person or white man first appeared in the 1680s, coinciding with wealthy landowners' strategy to prevent poor whites and enslaved Africans from uniting against them. By granting poor whites small land parcels and authority over black bodies, they created the Great Othering, a divide that aligned poor whites with wealthy whites against their economic interests. White body supremacy became a mechanism for white Americans to process centuries of white-on-white trauma by channeling it through black bodies. White body supremacy maintains itself through two complementary myths: black invulnerability and white fragility. Black bodies are viewed as both impervious to pain yet sources of service, while white bodies are seen as extremely vulnerable, especially to black bodies. This cognitive dissonance creates the demand: I need you to protect me from you. White fragility's deadliest form confuses fear with danger and comfort with safety, leading to violence against black bodies under the pretense of self-defense. When challenged about race, white bodies often respond defensively through fighting, fleeing, freezing, or verbal attacks, using strategies like false compatriotism, citing statistics, blaming victims, redirecting to class issues, or taking offense. Many African Americans protect themselves by soothing white bodies, altering speech patterns, avoiding natural hairstyles, and sidestepping triggering topics. As Brent Staples described, Black people develop strategies like whistling classical music to make white bodies feel safe, a protective response that becomes second nature. This creates a dynamic where Black bodies must care for white bodies, while white fragility prevents white Americans from taking responsibility for soothing themselves and addressing their historical trauma. Menachem distinguishes between clean pain and dirty pain. Clean pain involves moving through discomfort rather than avoiding it, requiring us to stay settled during conflict to achieve greater freedom. Dirty pain stems from avoidance and denial, manifesting differently across groups. White supremacists talk without listening, white progressives develop guilt and savior complexes, African Americans experience internalized oppression, and law enforcement develops reflexive distrust. Moving through clean pain relies on five anchors. 1. Soothe yourself. Physically ground during conflict. 2. Simply notice. Observe bodily sensations without judgment. 3. Accept the discomfort. Stay with sensations rather than fleeing. 4. Stay present. Remain embodied while facing conflict. 5. Safely discharge energy. Release tension through physical activity. These practices help us metabolize trauma rather than transmitting it, creating healthier neural pathways for stress response. Healing from racialized trauma varies across groups. African Americans heal through communal synchronization, singing, drumming, rhythmic clapping, and humming together. Traditional practices like ring shouts, church gatherings, and family reunions create powerful healing spaces. For white Americans, healing requires recognizing bodily responses to unfamiliar Black bodies and distinguishing between real and perceived threats. Exercises include choosing Black salespeople, letting Black customers go first, and sitting next to Black people in public spaces. Law enforcement professionals need self-care through meditation, yoga, massage, neighborhood walks, dancing, stress reduction apps, time in nature, and family connection. Departments should implement wellness programs and trauma-informed training. For everyone, healing occurs on a continuum rather than as a binary state. Any movement makes a difference. Small, consistent actions accumulate to create meaningful change. Our bodies maintain the capacity to learn, change, and grow even after severe trauma. Individual healing is essential, but insufficient. We must also create cultural expressions that reject white body supremacy. Culture lives in our bodies through foods, stories, and what moves us, trumping cognitive elements like ideas and principles. This explains why even brilliant anti-white supremacy strategies have failed. Menachem argues each group must transform their own culture before working together. African Americans need leaders who've addressed their racialized trauma. White Americans must build anti-white supremacy culture through compelling narratives, mentoring systems, and rituals. Police need to implement genuine community policing by becoming part of the communities they serve. While healing may take generations, the alternative perpetuates trauma and dirty pain for all Americans. We stand at the reckoning, choosing between embracing clean pain or generating dirty pain through avoidance. The time to begin is now. Our bodies remember what our minds have forgotten, but also hold the key to healing. Through embodied practice, we can transform generations of trauma into a foundation for connection and peace. The journey begins with coming home to our bodies.